What is up, everybody? Frankie Cardicelli, Chris Watkins, as always, we are back. We had to make an episode today because obviously the Sacramento Kings moved up to number 4 in the NBA draft. We've been talking about the NBA lottery, and I released a video on KHGK talking about the odds of the history of people moving back or moving up from number 7 in the NBA draft. And it's happened every year since they've adjusted the lottery odds. And sure enough, the Sacramento Kings are blessed with moving up to the number 4 spot. Frank, first off, were you expecting? I'm not even going to ask you because I know you were. Tell me how excited you were when they moved up, because I know that you thought they were going to move down. Not even stay. I know you thought that they were going to move to like 9 or 8.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week, just what our expectations were. And it's always tough to not get excited for the lottery. I mean, I have gotten really excited over the past, 3 or 4 lotteries. And it all goes back to
16 lotteries.
Well, yeah, 16, of course. But 2018 was electric when you saw the Kings move up to number 2. And I think we all were kind of hoping that that would go the same way. But yesterday I was pretty low energy. Going through COVID, mind you, my first go around with COVID, not been a fun time. So my energy was really low all day, just been holed up in my room. And I will say, as soon as it got to 8 and the Kings didn't drop to 8 and we were on that 7th spot, I was like sitting in my bed, and as soon as 8 came up and I knew it wasn't the Kings, I like went to the floor. Like I got like on my knees and was like leaning like on my hands and knees, like towards the TV, just waiting in anticipation. And as soon as I saw that Blazers logo, I got some adrenaline that I really needed, and kind of tapering off now. I'm kind of crashing, but very exciting, man. Very exciting that the Kings get I won't say a do-over from 2018, because that was inexcusable, and Luka is arguably a top 3 talent in the NBA now. But they get a do-over in a sense of they are handed another golden ticket, kind of, in a sense. They get another chance to jump forward, and they're going to get a crack at a top talent in the draft, whereas 7 or 8, I don't think they would have had. I mean, we'll see what happens and how things pan out for the next couple of years, because with the draft, you never know. But you have to feel better about being at the 4th spot. So I'm feeling great. I'm feeling really optimistic. I think this offseason is going to kind of it's got kind of like a jolt. I think things are kind of going to be moving quick for the front office as far as getting people in for draft workouts, some big names. I'm excited. Chris, how did you take it? Were you feeling? I can't remember if you told me or not you thought they were going to jump. Did you think they're going to jump?
Frankie, I told you yesterday that I all day had a weird feeling that the Kings were going to win the lottery. I was like, you know what? I don't know why 7.5 sounds pretty high to me. As I get an email, let's ignore that. We're ignoring work for the next 45 minutes. I was expecting them to win the lottery. I don't know what, why, or how, but my expectation was we're going to go in and, by God, Domantas Sabonis is going to bring us the good luck we need, and he's going to win that damn thing. And when the Portland Trailblazers logo came up and we saw that we had jumped, I was like, oh my God. Like it was almost, I don't want to say it was out of body because that's very dramatic, but I definitely felt weightless for a moment of time. And I was like, we're going to get young Sean Bradley, and things are going to change around here.
Very game winner-esque. I feel like is the feeling that I can kind of compare that to, like a buzzer beater, where you just kind of feel it. It's kind of like out of body. It's like an out of body experience where you're just kind of like, oh my God, that really just happened. But then I think you shared a little disappointment when I texted you originally, because they didn't go to the top 3, which is of course we didn't move to the top 3. And it's kind of like a three-headed monster at the top of the draft with Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, and Paolo Banchero. But it does suck that they didn't get to kind of get into that area, but I think we'll have some discussions in a few minutes here about some people could fall or jump, what have you. But I think it's a huge win that they're number 4. Like, right. I mean, we can agree that that the Kings having a fourth pick is, it's an asset first and foremost for themselves or for another team. Someone out there might say, hey, we really want Jaden Ivey, or we really want Keegan Murray, and he might not be there at 5 or 6 or 7, and they're drafting either 10th, and the Kings can say, okay, well, maybe you have something we're interested in. So it changes everything as far as that goes. If the Kings stayed at 7 or fell to 8 or 9, they're that team trying to trade up and maybe have to move an asset or a Rashawn Holmes or a Davion Mitchell to move up to get a player they wanted. Now they're in the driver's seat. They can move Rashawn, or if they choose to move Davion, which I'm not saying I want them to, but he is their youngest player with the most control. Maybe that they have some chips to move around and play with now. So this changes everything as far as the offseason and what they can and can't do. So it's a win.
I definitely agree. I mean, there's no way that this can be viewed as anything but positive for the Sacramento Kings. I mean, you like you said, 7, there's nothing really guaranteed at number 7. You're kind of hoping that somebody that you were higher on than most teams falls to you. And that's kind of the best case scenario, where at 4, you kind of have, you know, not the top pick of the litter, but you still get some of the top prospects. And, you know, you were talking a second ago about how we probably missed out on the Paolo Banchero, Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith thing. I'm not so certain of that. You know, it always ends up happening in the draft where something will surprise us in the top 5. I remember last year, it was a foregone conclusion. You can check every single mock draft that was out there. The Toronto Raptors were going to take Jalen Suggs at number 4 and surprise everyone by taking Scottie Barnes, who, mind you, was the rookie of the year last year, was taken at number 4. So I say that to say things happen. You never know. Maybe Detroit doesn't like Paolo Banchero and wants to go with Jaden Ivey instead.
You mean whatever.
Houston? Houston, I'm sorry. Houston. Though that would be a little weird fit with Jalen Green, but I'm more just to say, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the top of the draft, and things can change, and you know, Keegan Murray might end up being Keegan Murray might slip into that top 3. Who knows? Maybe AJ Griffin in the pre-draft process becomes a clear number 4 prospect. Things happen is more my point, and it's all, nothing but good for the Kings, because they're going to get a lot of offers, I think, or be able to create a lot of packages with that number 4 pick. And it's going to be exciting to look at all of these prospects and get a good idea of what's out there, and you can kind of evaluate which you feel like is a better opportunity for you. The interesting thing for me will be how much of Monty McNair's contract goes into the decision at what they do with 4. Whereas, like, maybe if Monty had more security, he'd feel more inclined to take a risk on a Shaedon Sharpe. Whereas, you know, with him having such a short leash on his contract, maybe he'd lean more towards a Keegan Murray, someone who seems to be ready now, or a Paolo Banchero. Or if he's more inclined to trade it because he feels like, I don't have time to see any of these guys develop, and I would much rather cash in this number 4 and cash in, like you said, Rashawn Holmes or something, and see if you can get, I don't know who's available at this moment. You know, the rumor mill hasn't quite started, but there's always, every summer, there's always some disgruntled NBA star who wants to find a new home. And, you know, maybe Sacramento can be that place. Maybe, you know, I don't know if Bradley Beal's an ideal fit, but, you know, someone like that would probably be the dream case scenario for the Kings.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at the lottery here, and now it's the draft order.
Excuse me.
And one thing I kind of want to point out is the Kings didn't tank, and it was a topic of discussion all season long. The Kings need to tank. And they played poor basketball, but it wasn't tanking by definition. And we should be thankful they didn't, because if they did continue to lose games and try to beat out those teams like Indiana and Portland, who I think they both ended the season on big losing streaks.
Yeah.
Portland and Indiana and Detroit, for that matter, they all dropped in the lottery. The Kings jumped 3 spots. So things happen as they should. And I'm not trying to sit here and get philosophical.
Big karma guy.
Everything happens for a reason, but it's, you know, let the basketball gods drive sometimes. They don't drive the Kings in the right direction every time, mind you, but in this scenario, they won 30 games and it was a bad season, but they're the only team in that 7-6-7-8 range that jumped. The Rockets also dropped and OKC jumped and so did the Magic, but the Kings were the big winner here. They're the team that jumped the most spots in this draft. They jumped 3 spots, and it's kind of funny how it works. It's kind of similar to what happened with the DeMarcus Cousins trade. And when the Kings jumped to 3 and there was a pick swap and they had to go to 5, but
raindrop happened. Drop top.
Yeah, the Nick Stauskas pick swap tweet. Jesus, what a time. But it's interesting how that worked out, because now you look at the Sabonis trade and they get Domantas Sabonis, 2 more years of him, and essentially I won't say you got a fourth overall pick too, but who's to say the Kings get a fourth overall pick if they hang on to Tyrese Halliburton? Maybe the Kings have the 7th or 8th pick. You never know who some of these guys could turn into. But look, the draft is a crapshoot, and we're going to see so many rumors pop up over the next month. Like, things we say today might not matter next week. It's just that's how the draft works. The Kings could bring in Jaden Ivey next week and he could blow everybody away. A week later, they could bring in Keegan Murray, and then rumors could circulate saying that the Kings are having dinner with him at Doko. We've seen the picture of Luka Doncic with Vlade Divac. We don't need to keep going down that rabbit hole. I would say, look at what the experts are saying. And today, just this morning, you know, a new Woj pod, Mike Schmitz from ESPN, he's big on, obviously, everything NBA draft. He's a guy that's super plugged in. He knows what's going on, knows a lot more than I do. I'm assuming he knows more than what you know, Chris.
No, he doesn't. Probably,
no,
he definitely does. No, Mike Schmitz is a goat. Like, that, he's in the – Mike Schmitz, if I'm not mistaken, is the creator and, like, overall was the driving force behind Draft Express, which mm-hmm. we all grew up, you know, knowing that iconic music where they would show, you know, every prospect's strengths and weaknesses. And, yeah, I mean, Mike Schmitz has been in the game for years, and he's definitely a legend. So, well, I would definitely take everything he says about the recruiting process, prospects and the draft process.
If you do take what he says seriously, and you're into that kind of thing, here's what he said today. I'm gonna see if I can play this about Keegan Murray in the Sacramento Kings.
Them, like, needing to compete now and, like, get a guy who can fit with these pieces. It's Keegan Murray, like, yeah, to a T.
Yeah,
like, this guy scored 24 points a game, having almost no plays called for him. And it seems like forever they've been looking for, like, a big rangy wing. And I just think he would be ideal alongside Sabonis, alongside Davion Mitchell, De'Aaron Fox. Like, he fits perfectly.
Go through Jonathan Givony's mock draft that he's got up on ESPN.com. And he's got Paolo at 3 to Houston, Keegan Murray 4 to the Kings, and then Jaden Ivey at 5 to Detroit.
Personally,
So that's basically where we're looking at here. We're looking at, out of the gates, the Keegan Murray train is leaving the station. And I think most Kings fans that were on Twitter during March Madness were very enamored with Keegan Murray and what he was doing for Iowa. I mean, he was arguably the best college basketball player this year. Just look at what he did at Iowa. 26.5 points per game, a little under 10 rebounds, 2.2 blocks, 1.5 steals. So we're looking at a guy who, number one, he is a floor spacer, which the Kings definitely need next to Sabonis. 55% from the field, 40% from three, and he took 5 threes per game, mind you. This is college basketball. You know, we'll see how the shot translates. Little Tyrese Halliburton throwback for you. Will the shot translate? But a floor spacing forward that can play defense, I mean, I feel like Monty McNair is going to be all over that. I mean, I guess I'm kind of getting to a point here where I want to ask you, Chris, just, like, right now, today, May 18th, the lottery was not even 24 hours ago. Do you have a favorite right now for who you want the Kings to select, or are you kind of wanting to see how the next couple of weeks pan out?
I definitely want to see how the next couple of weeks pan out. You know, people's just how experts see the draft going. I definitely see Keegan Murray as somebody who's probably going to benefit from off-season content and stuff like that. He's a big, rangy guy who can shoot. Those guys tend to definitely stick out during the draft process. And, you know, he has stats to back it up. I think he almost averaged 3 blocks a game, 26 points, 11 rebounds in college. And, you know, he was, like Mike Schmidt said, he was pretty much the team over there at Iowa, and they didn't really run much of an offense around him. I think Keegan Murray's probably the favorite at the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, you hear a lot about Jaden Ivey, if you hear a lot about AJ Griffin, you know, just any and everything. Again, I really feel like we're going to hear a lot about maybe the possibility of Paolo Banchero slipping, or I feel pretty confident that Jabari and Chet are going to be 1 and 2, but you never know. I think a lot of things happen during the draft process and people find injuries that weren't there. I don't know if the Kings are necessarily in the range where that they'll be affected by that, but you never know. I mean, Chet's a really skinny guy, and if he, you know, gets, I shouldn't even say this because they're draft prospects, but if something happens, if they find anything in any of their medicals, things can happen.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Orlando, they have Suggs. They still have Markelle Fultz in their contract. They probably do need to focus on getting a big. I mean, I know that the Mo Bamba thing didn't really work out. I mean, he's turned himself into kind of a serviceable big. I think he had a good year last season. But I would be pretty surprised that they went with a guard. I again, though, it's a draft. Anything goes. And Monty McNair has proven he will draft the player who he believes is the best player available no matter the position. He drafted Tyrese Halliburton, a guard, who he should have. He was definitely the best player available at 12 in 2020. And then last year, even though he had 2 guards under contract with 3, really, De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, and Buddy Hield, he drafts Davion Mitchell. So maybe Monty McNair hasn't made up in his mind that Jaden Ivey is the guy that should go at number 4. I mean, it seems like this, if you cast the wide net out over the other mock drafts from around the NBA world, Jaden Ivey seems to be the popular pick at 4, and people say he is a guy that could be a reason why a Banchero would fall to 4. So that's what's interesting to me. Interesting to me is going to be the fact that it's very rare, like you said, that the top 3 or 4 go by the book. And last year was a perfect example of that. You never know who the Rockets could be having an eye on. They might be envisioning a backcourt where they get to put Shaedon Sharpe. They might be really big on Shaedon Sharpe or Jaden Ivey. AJ Griffin's a guy who I also wouldn't, you know, as far as a jump in the draft, the Kings could be someone who, they're looking for defense. They are bringing Mike Brown in, who is a defensive-minded coach, and they are pretty shallow at the 4 position. Harrison Barnes is an expiring contract. They don't really have a backup small forward. I mean, Mo Harkless is under contract, but I don't know what their plans are with him next season. Maybe AJ Griffin's a guy they look to for defense. There's just so many possibilities that are going to pop up, and I hope we get some answers in the next couple of weeks as far as pre-draft workouts. I really don't like it when teams select people that didn't work out for them. I mean, the Kings drafted Ben McLemore, Thomas Robinson. I don't know if Marvin Bagley even worked out for them. I can't really remember, though. Do you remember if Marvin Bagley worked out for the Kings in 2018?
I don't remember any specific content about it, but that's kind of how we end up learning about, you know, it, and it's always tough. The Kings aren't often in this position where they're actually at the top of the draft. They're usually in the 7-8s. And like usually with top prospects, they're usually pretty sly about how they move around for private workouts and stuff, because agents like to set a precedent of like, we're not working out for anybody past five or something because we believe that he's a top five pick.
So Bagley did work out for the Kings.
I'm just rambling, but yeah, I'm saying.
He did work out for the Kings. Point is, I would be surprised if the Kings get one of Holmgren, Smith, or Banchero to Sacramento for a workout. That's my concern. If they get one of those guys to Sacramento, I feel a lot better about it. I mean, Banchero was a guy in college. He cramped a lot. Like he had a huge cramping problem.
Like, yeah, he has an incredible it definitely went viral because I saw it like 12 times this season where he like sweats profusely. Mm-hmm. Like he loses like I think they said like 10 pounds a game off of sweat.
It's crazy. It's something like that. It's like 5-10 pounds.
This first man off, sweats so I relate, much. My guy. Like I'm a big heavy sweater and it's not cute, but like 10 pounds, like that's insane. Like that's definitely like you need to talk with some real medical professional
for sure,
because that could I feel like that's not natural.
I can't remember what professional athlete commented on it was a House of Highlights post or something about how Banchero had to keep going to the locker room to get hydrated or something, and I can't remember who it was, a pro basketball player. I can't remember who it was. It was from back in the 90s, and he said that he I don't know if it was a thyroid problem or what, but he's like I had a medical condition that I needed to have taken care of, and that was one of the main things. I kept sweating and was always dehydrated. And I'm sure that Banchero's on this, and I'm sure he's getting the medical stuff's going to have to come through no matter what through this draft. But point is, I don't want the Kings to draft anybody that they have not had in for a workout, that they haven't sat down with and talked to. And Monty seems like the guy that's going to definitely go through that due diligence, and he's not going to pull a Vladdy or Pete D'Alessandro and just kind of, you know, go crazy and draft Chet Holmgren if he falls to four. I mean, if Chet Holmgren falls to four, I'm going to be kind of concerned about what those three teams before are, what information they're receiving. But I guess let me ask you with this. I mean, because we're going to talk about this the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to get into it with our draft buddies, Bryant West from the Kings Herald, Bobby Gerald, from Hoop of Possession. We're going to reach out to those guys in the next couple of weeks and hopefully get some good conversations going with people that know more than we do. Dream scenario, Chris. Dream scenario, whether it be the Kings jumping up to draft one of these guys or if someone dropping, is there someone out of those big three up top that's like your best case scenario for the draft? Like if this player falls to four, who do you have your eyes on that's your favorite, like your number one choice?
I mean, for me, it's Jabari Smith. I've had a borderline obsession with him ever since the start of this college season. I mean, he came out the gates incredibly hot and stayed that way all season. Just his size, he's a legitimate 6'10". He can shoot the basketball he's an incredible shooter. He's got range. I just think his scoring ability and what he showed potential on the defensive end, I think he would be an ideal for a great stretch for someone like a Rashard Lewis kind of mold, a bigger Harrison Barnes even. And I like that so much better than playing Harrison at the four. And what's better than one Harrison Barnes than having two? That's kind of who I have my eyes on. But also saying that, you know, I think I'm also not a big fan of Sabonis being our center. And I think someone like Chet Holmgren, who offensively can play on the perimeter, but defensively protect the rim the way he does. And he shows potential to possibly not be so Rudy Gobert-ish out on the perimeter, maybe be able to at least keep people in front of him. I think his potential as just a two-way monster would fit incredibly next to Sabonis. So go figure, the top two prospects I would ideally like to have.
For sure, though. I'm all in on Jabari Smith. Jabari Smith is the guy where when we jumped, I'm like, oh, my God, if they get the number two pick, it's literally a do-over from 2018. We can actually get a do-over again because Jabari Smith is a guy I think that can be – maybe the rookie of the year.
We also had his dad.
Which we did.
A former nice, Kings, interesting wrinkle.
Former Kings legend.
Definitely have not had that kind of situation before.
if Chet Holmgren falls to four, and I think there's a 0% chance that happens. I think that one of the first three teams will take him. He probably will go number one overall, to be completely transparent. His size, and I know he's 20. These are kids. These are guys that are still going through, you know, growing into men. But 7 feet, 195, it just is concerning to me. I mean, does that concern you at all, just the weight?
Let me tell you, he's bigger than 7 feet, too. He's definitely a 7'2 kind of guy. And, yeah, the weight is definitely concerning. I mean, people will definitely be quick to bring up Kevin Durant and Anthony Davis and other small guys, even though Anthony Davis has kind of filled out a little.
He's beefed up.
There's no way Chet Holmgren will look like Anthony Davis at any point. I think Kevin Durant's body type is probably a more apt comparison for what Chet will probably be. It's concerning, for sure.
Well, that's concerning because, I mean, Durant plays the wing, and Chet's going to be banging around in the paint with centers. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I feel like Sabonis matched up with Holmgren. I mean, Sabonis isn't even that big of a guy. Like, he could outweigh and kind of maybe almost bullied around Chet. So
yeah, oh, for sure. I think the best, I mean, it's going to be a tough couple years, first couple years for Chet, for sure, in the paint. He's not going to be able to have the kind of success he had in college in terms of staying in front of people in the post. But he does have speed, and he is still a very good athlete, and I think he is a good rim protector off ball. And is that going to save him for a couple years until he can bulk up? I think so, especially with how special he is offensively as well. But it's definitely going to be a matter of how big he can get, because even Rudy Gobert came in as a very, very skinny, tall kid, and it took him
Giannis too.
3 to 4 Giannis as well. I mean, you put these guys in NBA strength and conditioning programs, they're going to get bigger. I mean, we've even seen it with De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox was an incredibly skinny kid. Still has, you know, some work to go on his body, but he, at least, you know, his upper body, he's been able to grow it out to a fairly respectable size. I mean, we've seen De'Aaron in the past couple of years really start to attack the basket more and convert more and ones, and I think that's directly linked to him getting stronger and being, you know, in the gym for, I assume, 350 days a year. And you know, Chet's never had that kind of workout program before. I'm sure he started during the summer, and I'm sure there's going to be, Frank, you better be ready, there are going to be weekly, probably monthly updates, probably weekly, I'm gonna say bi-weekly updates on Chet Holmgren's weight.
Oh,
I guarantee you'll hear,
sure,
oh, he's put on 25 pounds of muscle, Chet Holmgren. Like, yeah, he's not some skinny kid. And it's,
I saw Chet Holmgren eating at Denny's last night.
Yeah, it's like the reverse DeMarcus Cousins. You remember for like the first couple years of DeMarcus's career, every summer he would come skinnier, and it's like, oh, like this guy's
getting in shape.
And yeah, I just think it's going to take a couple years for Chet, but I think eventually it'll all work out. And I mean, he's 20, which is actually pretty old for a freshman coming out. I think most of the guys, I think AJ Griffin is like 20 or 20. He's 18 and a half.
Yeah.
So
he's a true freshman.
Yeah. You know, it's not like Chet is an 18-year-old. At least he's got a little bit further in his maturity.
What I want to know is, if the Kings draft Keegan Murray, it'll be back-to-back years they've drafted, I believe, the oldest player in the first round. Keegan Murray, did he redshirt? I mean, I'm trying to look at his college. Did he redshirt? I don't know if he redshirted or what, but he's going to be 22 this summer. In August, he turns
22. Like a king to me.
And this is another reason why I feel like if I had to make a choice right now, our friend Cam Salerno from the Sacramento Bee, he asked me a question this morning and said, you know, if you have a gun to your head and you have to make a choice right now,
relax, who, Cam.
Who's your pick? I know. I was like, intense.
Cam got
bro.
Shooters.
It's not that deep. Who do you have to pick? And I said, you know, I feel like it's probably Keegan Murray. And the only reason why I feel like that he is the most likely pick right now is Monty McNair has not drafted a freshman in his two seasons as GM here. He drafted Tyrese Haliburton, who was a sophomore, who was about to be 20 years old. And he drafted Davion Mitchell, who I believe is the same age as De'Aaron Fox. I think he's 24, was 23 when he was drafted. So it makes me think, why would Monty McNair pass up a not, you can't say veteran, he's in college, but he was a sophomore somehow, 21-year-old, who was a All-American, offensively gifted shooter, plays defense, athletic. I don't know how he passes him up for another guard. But again, these are things that were very frustrating last year. I mean, I can't remember who did we pass up last year where we were really frustrated and he drafted
Moses Moody,
because the Kings needed a shooting guard / small forward, and we drafted another guard. So these are things that are frustrating with Monty McNair, because we might be sitting here saying, oh wow, maybe Bancaro falls to four and we still take Jaden Ivey, because we don't know what the front office is thinking and how they are gauging these prospects. They might have it up in their mind already who they want to take. So be on the lookout for those rumors. Don't fall for bait stuff, clickbait. You know, there are sources out there that are really reliable. I mean, I think Sam Amick is a pretty reliable guy if it comes down to draft workouts or what the team's thinking. I just think we should be careful about what we read and the information we absorb the next month, because I got to be honest, it's been a long 2 weeks, 3 weeks of just waiting for the lottery to come. And all I wanted to know is, where are we going to pick? Where are we going to pick? Where are we going to pick? And now it's just changing to, who are they going to take? Who are they going to take? And I feel like I'm talking to myself, but I'm also talking to you out there. Need to not overthink it. Don't overthink it. Fourth pick, we're in a position of power. Do you agree, Chris? I think we're in a position of power.
Absolutely. And I kind of alluded to it earlier. Like, they can really take a step back, evaluate all the prospects, see how they feel about them, get some feelers on trades, what kind of value the number four pick has out there, what other teams feel they can get out of the number four pick, how they feel about the prospects. And you can kind of, you know, get everything in front of you and pick and choose which route you want to take. And it's definitely a power position. It's a lot better than being at seven and just kind of at that point, you probably are waiting until draft day to make an ultimate decision on what you're going to do, because you kind of don't know what's going to be there and you don't want to miss on somebody you were really high on because you didn't expect them to fall. I think at four, you know, you can, if they are going to move the pick, I think they'll be swift about it and they'll have the ability to do it without heading into draft night. I definitely think it's a power position for them to be in. I absolutely agree.
Speaking of power, sitting here at my desk, a massive spider just like outside my window on the screen. And I was going to like open the window and kind of like flick it away maybe, but
I have power over this insect.
Disappeared.
Speaking of power.
Disappeared.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of power.
Oh, geez. I forgot we were going to start with this. I guess we're good.
We were going to start with this, but honestly, I think this fits a lot better to do it this way, because I think this is going to be the most impact. We got all the business out of the way. Now it's time for the passion. News dropped around.
Classic news dump.
A couple hours before the NBA draft lottery. Sean Cunningham, the wonderful, amazing, well-sourced Sean Cunningham, dropped that Anjali Ranadive, daughter of Vivek Ranadive, our governor. People out there in the media sphere are still calling these people owners. It's actually governors now.
Is it really?
It is. Yes, they're the governors of the team. It's because. It's because, you know, just visual, you know, not visually, but you don't want to say that these people own.
Are you serious?
These people. I swear, I am not joking. You can look this up. The NBA does no longer refers to Mark Cuban as an owner. He is the governor of the team.
Jeez, I'm out of the loop on this one.
Yeah, that's okay. Because like I said, I've heard literally everybody locally has referred to it as owner. Anyway, I digress. Yeah. Anyways, that's pretty much the story. Is Vivek hired his daughter, Anjali Ranadivia. Oh, I didn't even say the position, to be the assistant general manager of the Stockton Kings, the Sacramento Kings G League affiliate. Just some initial thoughts is
why
assistant general manager of a G League team is an incredibly small position in the grand scheme of things, which I think is how Vivek viewed that position in terms of like, this is a real role. It is definitely a basketball operations role, but in terms of PR, at the end of the day, like, she is not going to be making franchise altering decisions in this position.
Here's a problem I have with it. Yeah. I started off with a thought process of, oh, you know, it's just a G League team.
Yeah.
And then I kind of sat there for a minute and was thinking, that's really messed up for me to think that, because some people out there have worked like their entire lives to get to that point. And some people work as hard as they can. They never get that far to being an assistant general manager of basketball operations for a minor league NBA team. And I can't remember who Anjali is going to be working with. I don't know. I think it was one of the head of scouting who is a fellow woman in sports, and her qualifications are off the charts. She is completely credible. Definitely somebody who I believe belongs in a front office in the G League or NBA. Anjali Ranadive, I don't think it's unfair to say this is a classic case of nepotism. I just don't think you can say with a straight face that she deserves this opportunity over some people that are probably more deserving of being next to Paul Johnson in that chair. I just don't really know how you go from, I think she was a coordinator of social engagement and she was a musician. Now she's going to be in a pretty important position with guys that, you know, go back and forth between Sacramento and Stockton. And you made jokes, Chris, about her being the representative on lottery day. Yes. You weren't far off.
I was not.
She was definitely a part of lottery day.
Yes.
I don't like it at all.
The initial, like, when I first saw Sean's tweet about this, it looked like, oh, this is perfect. We both work at this station. Have you ever heard Jason Ross's Mad Libs?
Yes. Yes.
It sounded like one of those. Like he took a sentence out of Jason Ross's Mad Libs and he tweeted it out. It was Anjali Ranadive, assistant general manager, Stockton Kings. Like those, it seems like a joke. Like it does. Like you're saying, there's absolutely no qualifications for her to receive that title, that role, that level of responsibility. And especially for it to just be done through a tweet and not through a release or through them really having to explain themselves at all. I think that doesn't solve the problem at all, but I think I would have been able to digest it a little easier if. And here's the thing, let's think about this from Vivek's point of view, because I can already hear what I think the logic makes sense. It's just for it to be dumped how it was is a problem. Vivek's thinking one day Anjali is going to run this team. Clearly, I get murdered. I'm sure didn't say murdered. He gets absolutely killed is not any better. That's killed close. In the media. He gets absolutely killed.
Dragged.
He gets dragged. I like those lesser degrees. He gets dragged for not making good basketball decisions. He's trying to put her in a better situation so that when she inevitably runs things, mm-hmm. she will have a better scope of how this thing runs and how, you know, the minutia of all the little things, especially as a general assistant general manager of a G League team, you're going to deal with a lot of really small things and just the process of how everything works. You're going to have a good understanding of that. And I think that's why they have her in this role is it at in 2027, she's going to be the owner or GM. Doug Christie's going to be the head coach. And Paolo Banchero is going to be raising his third MVP and second finals MVP for the Sacramento Kings.
Look, I can get behind that thought process for sure. That, you know, Vivek is getting older, and he I believe he's what, 70 years old now? 64.
Let's just say Vivek has an HBO Max subscription for sure. He's been watching a ton of Succession, a ton of winning time. And he's like, you know, this Jeannie Buss character, I see something here. And he's like, Logan Roy, that guy, he knows how to prolong this Succession thing.
Kendall Roy and Siobhan. I can get behind that thought process that put her through the process and have her be educated on the way that these things work on the inside. And yeah, I feel good about that. I just feel like there was a position that probably could have been a little more.
I completely agree.
Less to chew on than assistant general manager of the Stockton Kings, because I've thought about it, and like I just feel like it's not that much of like a throwaway position. It's kind of like a big.
No, it's really not. I mean, it's a position that you can actually give somebody, like you're saying, like that scout that you were mentioning, somebody who has legit credentials, and somebody who might have an actual, you know, front office future, and you can use that as maybe even in your own front office, they can rise the ranks, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to steal your point, but to give her assistant general manager is just too high of a position.
No, and like, what were we saying? Oh, Vivek shouldn't be a part of this process. The free agency, coaching decisions, draft. He's like, okay, I'll step out. Hands off. I'm not going to be a part of this. But now his daughter's involved. So I'm just wondering, is she going to be someone who's going to be open ears and eyes and listening and retaining information and there to learn, or is she going to be there to have input out the gates? Because I'm not okay with that. Like, I'm not right now. I mean, you have to learn, the training wheels need to come off. Maybe she'll turn into the next Jeannie Buss. Maybe she'll turn the Kings into a dynasty. I hope that she does. The way this whole thing happened, it was just super out of nowhere. The timing is interesting, how it was hours before the draft lottery. I don't know how these things work. I believe that the lottery results were not released, but they are done an hour before. I don't think that Vivek or anyone knew. That's why they tried to have it be a news dump or anything. But interesting timing and interesting position. Interesting everything. The Kings stand alone in being just the most interesting team in the NBA. So, sorry, Anjali, not trying to drag you or anything. I mean, I hope that you are a basketball mind and you are going to come in and prove us wrong. I hope.
And that's another thing, too, is like, it's not even a matter of like, I don't know, maybe I've never spoken with Anjali. She might be an incredible basketball mind and Vivek really feels like she can whatever. But it does come down to the qualifications thing, and if you are going to do this, like, yeah, have her go into the scouting department or something, or you know, just to give her straight up assistant general manager again of the G League team it's just not a good look, regardless of how much actual power she has. It's just not
is she fourth or fifth
needed to happen.
fourth or fifth in the feeding chain in Sacramento. What is it? It's Monty, Wes Wilcox.
General manager of the G League team really has say in any sort of, you know.
Paul Johnson position. Was a part of the coaching process here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I think that she will receive a lot of information and maybe be consulted on things, but I can't imagine that at the end of the day she will be her at the moment. I don't think as an assistant general, if she is speaking as the assistant general manager of the Stockton Kings and not as Vivek Ranadive's daughter who has a front office position in the franchise, then I don't think that her, you know, I don't think she will have much weight at this point in time. But again, I think that this is just a lot of grooming for the inevitable. I mean, she's going to take over in some capacity, whether it be have an actual front office role or step in for Vivek. I think at some point she will have say and a majority say over basketball decisions. It's just a matter of when at this point.
I'm watching The Offer right now on Paramount Plus through my COVID times, watching some things. It's just interesting show. Not a great show, not a bad show. I love The Godfather. But one of the things that happened is the head of Paramount did not like Al Pacino. And the director, Francis Ford Coppola, loved Al Pacino. So they finally had a compromise. It's like, okay, I'll give you Pacino. You give me what's his name from Elf? To play
Will Ferrell.
Jimmy Caan. James Caan to play, Will Ferrell in The Godfather. Compromise. Point is, I could see this being a similar conversation with Vivek, with Monty. I'll give you Mike Brown. You're going to give me what I want. And maybe this is a compromise that they made.
You really think that?
That
seems crazy. Like, I guess that can't be out of the question for Sacramento, but that seems absolutely
if I sound like a pompous ass right now and I'm saying, hey.
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of people would agree that that would be on the table.
I'm not saying this is what happened. I'm just saying I could see this. I don't know if that's you scratch my back, I scratch yours. But we knew there was disconnect a little bit, that Vivek wanted Mark Jackson. And the Vivek of 7-8 years ago would have said, we're hiring Mark Jackson, deal with it. But this could be growth on Vivek's part by saying.
This could be growth is nepotism. Nepotism is growth.
It's a step in the right direction, maybe. I mean.
I'm not going to meddle, but I'm going to put somebody in a position where they probably could.
If I sound like an ass, I am sorry.
I don't think you do. No, I'm telling you, I don't think you do. I just think I'm not saying you, because again, I definitely think if you were to bring that up in conversation to just about anybody in town, they would definitely, you know, they would think like, oh, are you serious? Like that really, the fact that it is even available as an option that we can discuss in this world, like that should not exist. Like just that level of like, that is very toxic. That is an incredibly toxic conversation. If it truly did happen,
this whole scenario,
I choose to just act like that doesn't exist, because if it does exist, which again, I'm not saying it doesn't, I just want to live in the world where it doesn't.
I think
then I cannot continue to support this team, because that is nepotism is not how you succeed in life.
No, I don't think you should be proud of that. And I'm not saying she is, and she might have the same ideas we do. And maybe we hear from her at some point and she said, hey, you know, I do know my stuff, and I understand people are going to have these opinions of me. And she probably knows that going in, but it's on her to prove everybody wrong and do a good job. And she's one of the voices in the room now. She needs to be the she's gonna be a,
and again, her, she and her brother Anil, she will be forever, like,
yep,
and as Anil, long her as brother. Her team, her father owns the team, regardless of her having an actual front office position, she is going to, this is Vivek telling us right now, this he is showing us his succession plan, like she is 100% going to have a role with this franchise moving forward
forever.
point
and Anil. We can't forget about Anil.
Yes, and Anil. But she is at least more front facing at this moment.
Yes.
Anil was in the picture with Luca.
Which, he was a part of that process, I believe.
Yes. But so I say all this to say we all need to root for her, because at the end of the day, her success, if she does learn a lot of things and figure a lot of things out, that's only better for us, because she is going to have a role here. So she might as well learn a lot and be great. So we're rooting for you, Anjali. But boy, oh boy, you might want to talk to your dad about PR.
Yep, you have to hope that she's successful. I mean, whether you agree with it or not.
Also putting her in a very tough situation here.
Yeah, I would also keep this quiet. I don't know why they had to put that in a release, you know. I know it's a proud moment, I'm sure, in some ways for them, but you had to know, temperature check, that the fan base was not going to respond to this positively. And if you look at Sean's tweet, the ratio is
not insane.
Let me get a final tally on that ratio. I think it was
how does Sean? We'll for sure talk to Sean at some point, and we'll probably get the scoop. But like
415 quote retweets.
How many likes?
Retweets. It has as many quote retweets as likes.
Eek! A one for one.
There's 200 replies to a tweet.
Goodness gracious.
People are very upset by this.
Yeah.
So
I'm just curious, like, how, like, this feels like it's big enough to be like a Shams tweet or Woj tweet, and they didn't put anything out on it or even, you know, Mark Spears. For Sean to get it is very, very interesting. And I haven't seen anybody except for Jason Anderson confirm it. Not saying it's not true.
Sam Amick showed some emotion. He all he did was quote it and put dots. He put three dots.
Mm.
So not being received well by people that are very plugged in with the organization, just mind you.
Interesting.
So we're gonna have to hope she's gonna prove everybody wrong. That's all we can do.
You go, girl.
You go, girl. You were wrong though, Chris. You didn't.
She didn't. Yeah, no, I was wrong. We
both were wrong. I said there's no way Sabonis would do it. I said this is too big for him.
I definitely agreed with that. I 100% was like, "What? He's a bigger deal than this." And he's like, "No, I'm going to enjoy my summer." But you know, he's a team player, and that's what happens when you show up for your team, man. You get rewarded.
It looked like he just came from a wedding. Like he was like in a vest.
Looking sharp. Looking like he was, you know, probably like in a 007 movie or something.
He definitely looked like a 007 character. Looked like 007 himself, maybe.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I'm like, I don't know. Good vibes. Good vibes from DeMontis.
The reaction from Lillard and Sabonis was really fun too.
Yes,
just watching.
The smile was hilarious.
I love it.
You know what? Let's talk about this for half a second here. It turns out the Kings aren't a bunch of liars, and Alvin Gentry actually had a front office position. I don't know why it took so long for it to get announced. Maybe they had to iron out the specifics of the job. But Alvin Gentry, I completely forgot what the title was, but it was pretty much in basketball development or something like that.
I can try to pull it back.
Yeah, I probably should have looked it up before I brought it up.
No, that's okay. But we're at the end of the pod. This is a little housekeeping here.
Yeah.
A little housekeeping. Anjali Ronadive's in. Alvin Gentry is named Sacramento Kings Vice President of Basketball Engagement.
Maybe he took Anjali's job.
What that means is he will assist with player evaluations, advise strategy using his vast coaching experience and relationships from his time in the NBA. He was present at the NBA Draft Combine this week, along with Kings GM Monty McNair. Rest for an office. Yeah, so, I mean, I love Alvin Gentry. He was great with the media. Definitely a basketball mind. Like, the guy knows basketball. Obviously, wasn't great as the interim head coach, but I don't think anybody would have really done a great job in that role. So, you're paying him. Why not pay him to do some work, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the mentality of it is like, hey man, like we're going to give you this check and you know, you can, I guess you can golf if you want to, but Alvin, you've been doing this so long. Like, do you really, is that, that just doesn't seem like him. And so I think this is a nice transition for him and he'll take the year, I'm sure. And maybe, you know, maybe he can be the new Joe Dumars where he just kind of sticks around and has a big role, but is very undefined. Or maybe he just lasts the year, plays out his contract, and then retires, which is possibly probably more likely.
He likes Sacramento. He said before he enjoys the area. He likes he's been here this so far this offseason, obviously, probably getting his new job worked out, and he's now with the front office. So he might be really hands on next year. That'll be interesting to see. I'm very intrigued to see how we start rolling out the pre-draft workouts, because we'll be there for those, and it'll be interesting to see who's there. Will Alvin be in attendance? Will he be working with the coaching staff at all as far as communicating with Mike Brown? I believe that they worked together in Golden State for a season or two. So it should be interesting. I like Alvin. I'm happy he's sticking around, and you know, Alvin's sticking around.
Yeah, no, Alvin was always good vibes and is a very funny guy and is a basketball lifer. And, you know, I think Alvin definitely has some experience and some insight that he can help with the coaching transition for sure. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with Alvin coming in and, you know, helping Mike Brown get his feet wet as he's here. Letting, you know, I'm sure it's not going to be invasive at all, but, you know, I think Mike would love to hear what Alvin's thoughts are on his team. I think, you know, I just think Alvin's one of the all-time guys in the NBA, and to have him stick around is definitely a good thing.
Alvin and Mike Brown did not coach together in Golden State. Alvin Brown,
no, I think
Alvin Gentry, yeah.
They overlapped, right? Or as
14-15, Gentry was with the Warriors for their first championship, and then he accepted the Pelicans job that summer, similar fashion to what Mike Brown did with the Kings. So they missed each other by about a year. So nope, they might. I'm sure they know each other though. But again, not on the coaching staff. Gentry is in the front office, but as we saw in Winning Time as well, sometimes head coaches, it's hard to just not, you know, have some input here and there, especially when you're going to be working with Mike Brown that closely. So yeah, we will see.
Yeah. Yep. Is there anything else? I'm trying to think if it has been pretty quiet on the Kings front recently. Did you watch Davion Mitchell's YouTube documentary?
I did not watch it yet. No,
I watched part one. I believe.
How many parts is it?
I really don't know the answer to it, but I guess like five.
Okay. That's
a lot. What makes me say that.
Are they like 10 minutes long or something?
No, they're 30.
Okay. That's, yeah, they're, I mean, like, I should have spiel. Probably should have watched that during my first 4 days in quarantine.
it's a decent watch. Things that really stuck out to me were Davion Mitchell's a lot more, I mean, he was hanging out with his friends a lot in the video, but very expressive. We saw a very reserved Davion Mitchell. I think he started to open up later in the year, but for sure. I mean, you and I talked to him on media day, and he seemed very, very nervous, just like a very internal, quiet guy. He just was very expressive, obviously, like I said, around his friends playing video games. Oh my God. This is an all time quote from Davion Mitchell, in that video series, playing his friend in 2K. His trash talk line, incredible. I play defense in real life. I play defense in real life, bro. Locking down his friend saying, dude, I play defense in real
life. He's not lying.
I love it. Absolutely effing love it.
I like Davion Mitchell a lot.
Inject that into my veins.
I'm really torn on what's gonna happen this summer. Like, I feel like it makes too much sense for the Kings to float moving him, because I feel like he's not a bench guard, but I feel like he also was not a two guard. So
yeah, definitely. I think it's gonna be very interesting to see what the Kings do with him moving forward, because it's looking like an interesting fit. I mean, yeah, if he's gonna be too good to hold on to the bench, but.
And he was damn good.
Start at the two. Yeah. It'll be interesting for sure. And then, what they do at the two. I mean, if they're going to draft Jaden Ivey at the number four pick, he would presumably play next to De'Aaron Fox. And what does that do for Davion Mitchell's minutes?
It's going to be a wild summer, I think, man. And this is the first step. The first step to this summer was getting a number four pick. Because now I wrote a little bit today about how that just changes things. And it adds some value to this Kings team this summer. I mean, they have another shiny toy to play with. So let's see what to do with it. And I'm excited to see what the pre-draft workouts are going to look like. I think we're probably going to get some. We already got some that weren't open to the media, but I would imagine we get some more notable names here at the end of May, early June. And yeah, I think maybe we'll start doing some deep dives on each prospect. We'll get some guests.
Definitely. And we will do that redraft segment too.
Maybe next week we'll start doing the redrafts. And we also need to do our year end of year breakdowns for positions.
So, yeah, we'll do that eventually.
COVID was on the brain this past week. But now we have our off-season content's really rolling. That train is chugging along.
So, definitely.
I'm excited, man. I'm excited also to get out of my room, hopefully the next day or two. So,
yeah, it'll be nice to have you back in office.
Everybody stay safe out there, you know.
Please.
COVID's making a comeback.
Yes, it is.
Making a comeback. I've talked to like 6 or 7 people that I know that have COVID as well right now. So, going around.
Yep, definitely going around. Everyone be careful, be safe, because Frankie will tell you, I will tell you, it's not a fun time.
No. Shout out Pfizer, though.
Shout out Pfizer for the OGs. For Frankie Cardicelli, I'm Chris Watkins. Thank you all for listening so much. This has been Return of the Roar. Please be on the lookout for episodes coming early next week. Like we said, some draft previews, some prospect previews, and our redraft segment. Thank you so much, and y'all have a good one. Bye-bye.
Peace.